Hi everyone and welcome to the VookCast, Australia's Nintendo podcast. I'm Angelo Valdivia and with me this week are Luke Henderson.
Hey, hey.
And Oliver Brandt.
Hey.
We've got a great episode lined up for you this week, all about Reggie Fils-Aimé joining GameStop, a worrisome shortage of Nintendo Switch consoles among Australian retailers, Animal Crossing New Horizons making waves, but first, E3 2020 has officially been cancelled. So this was one that we talked about very briefly last episode, how we mentioned that GDC had been cancelled about a week or so before it was due to go ahead, and we speculated whether or not other events would get cancelled along the way. And within a couple of days, it was officially apparent that E3 will get cancelled after all. So originally the news came out from sources close to who are in the industry, places like Devolver Digital and Mike Futter, who is a game journalist, on Twitter, just, you know, putting out ominous tweets saying, you know, prepare to cancel your accommodation and flights to E3 and all these kinds of things. And then over the next day or so, the ESA came out officially and announcing the cancellation of E3. Luke, you're probably the best one to talk about this one in terms of like how it affects some people's travel plans and things, because you yourself were planning to go to E3, correct?
Yeah, so it was all sort of booked in there for it, you know, and early conversations were happening. And sort of the big thing about E3 is everyone thinks it sort of, you know, pops up a month beforehand, but, you know, the game companies themselves would start working on this back in, you know, October, November last year, get plans finalized in January, and then, you know, start building stuff. And the builds for the games, I should say, you know, in February and March. So them cancelling early is actually the best decision for the studios involved. Obviously not for the public, because, you know, we all want to see the games. But from a business point of view, it's best to get in early for it. The overall impact, though, is still, we'll see what happens with the digital stuff they're all planning to do.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that it was cancelled due to the coronavirus pandemic, which has since been upgraded to a pandemic since our last episode, which is quite concerning for a lot of places around the world. Lots of restrictions on socializing and events, you know, anywhere between 5 people in small events and hundreds of people in those larger scale events and things like that. The official ESA quote says, After careful consultation with our member companies regarding the health and safety of everyone in our industry, our fans, our employees, our exhibitors, and our longtime E3 partners, we have made the official decision to cancel E3 2020 scheduled for June 9 to 11 in Los Angeles. So like you said, Luke, so this announcement came on the 12th of March, so it was a good 3 months ahead of time, which is quite a long lead time to be canceling something like this. Which also gives plenty of time for a lot of companies to follow up on any contingency plans in regards to this cancellation. So instead of making, you know, in-person events on stages to hundreds of people in a crowded theater or anything like that, now they have the opportunity to make any sort of digital plans instead, live streams, you know, Nintendo Directs, those kinds of things like that. No idea as to whether or not these companies will actually make their announcements around the time that E3 will have been held, though. I mean, June, the early June sweet spot has always been that time where companies do come out and make their announcements. But now it's up in the air as to whether or not 20 or 30 companies will come together and make their announcements around roughly the same time. I mean, how do you guys feel about that?
I mean, let's face it, we're probably going to get quite a lot of games and announcements in June regardless. I'm pretty sure Nintendo will go ahead with its you know, E3 Direct as it always does. But I mean, like, this is, I mean, it's horrible to say it, but it, like, for a lot of companies, this is going to be a little bit of a saving grace, because, like, they now have so much time and resources to put towards the development of the game that they otherwise would have to put towards, you know, building playable demos for E3 and other also similar events.
Also saving a lot of money too. It costs millions of dollars to make those big announcements in person.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, these marketing campaigns and all of that, you know, whenever you go to E3, you see, like, there's, you know, gigantic paintings, usually by Bethesda, I think is the main one that does it, of, like, these gigantic things. And, like, they're saving all of their money now. So, like, that's something that, like, lets them have a little bit more flexibility, I feel. Because, you know, they don't have to announce something in June now. So, you know, if they're not ready to show it off in June, but they are in July or August, like that, I mean, it sucks for people waiting for these cool announcements, but like for the companies that now have that little extra bit of flexibility, it's going to be a bit of a saving grace for them.
Mm. Luke, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the flip side of that is a lot of the spaces have been paid for already. The Hotel Figueroa, which is where those giant murals go from Bethesda, like they had the Doom one last year and Fallout year before, those spaces, you know, are paid for. A lot of the social branding, you know, stuff like that is paid for in advance. So it's going to impact them still, but it's not going to be as big as if they cancelled it a month out. And as Ellie said, you know, the fact that, you know, these guys can now focus on building the game itself rather than building a demo for people to play for 5 minutes, you know, because those things, they're not easy to do. There's, you know, if you're presenting a game to the world for the first time and you want people to play it, you can't have crashes every 30 seconds. You can't have somebody walking through a wall, you know, that they shouldn't be able to. So the studio spend months building up specialized builds that are only for E3, and they take resources away from building up the whole game. So it's going to help them, but I still think we're going to see a lot of announcements come out around the same time, purely because all their marketing strategies and all their initial plans are still on that release, on that cycle. You know, and as much as it sucks, the investor side of things, the business side of things is going to still lead that regardless of what's happening in the world.
Fair enough. Something that will be of concern, though, for a lot of people who work in the industry, though, is the opportunity to actually come together face to face, to have those behind closed doors business meetings, or these smaller developers to actually meet with larger publishers and discuss whether or not they can release their games on their platforms and things. So it'll be interesting to see how those might be affected in terms of release schedule for the next year. So,
yeah, and that's the other thing, too, is like for a lot of people, E3 is a digital event. You know, I mean, I go to the
majority
show,
of the people.
But you guys don't go to the show, right? So for you guys, you watch it all online. You see the videos, you see the tweets and all that. So it's, for you, it's purely digital. And for, you know, 99% of people that care about E3, it is a digital only event. So the only thing we're really missing out on are the hands-on impressions. That's the sort of the big thing that we're not going to be getting this year. But companies will run things locally, I guarantee it, because they usually will do something after the show for the people that couldn't make it over anyway. So even though the show itself is cancelled in a physical sense, the digital version of it will still go ahead. And expect to see a lot of it. And as you said, like, it's a big social thing. I'm not kidding when I say last year I had a day. It started at 8:30 when I left the hotel, and I didn't get back to the room until nearly 2 a.m. the next morning. And I didn't stop the whole day. I just went to event to event to event to event. And I mean, one of them literally was just the Australian meetup. So it's Australian journalists and game devs that all go to Los Angeles for E3, because we're from all over the world at this point. You know, people have moved overseas or we're all around Australia. This is our chance to get together and just catch up. So the social side of things is impacted, but yeah, everything else is still going to go ahead. I guarantee it.
Fair enough. All right, let's move on then.
Just quickly before we move on, are we allowed to mention the tweet? Because there was a slight indication before, you know, companies started tweeting it out that E3 might be cancelled. But the source of that indication is a little bit of an 18 plus story.
Oh no, by all means, go for it.
So without going too much into it, somebody who was in the adult entertainment industry was reportedly told by an executive from a large games company, who we don't know who it is and we won't speculate on that, that E3 would be cancelled. This executive apparently had been like a longtime client of the adult entertainer. So it came out like a few days before, you know, Devolver and all of that started tweeting about it. And nobody really took it all that seriously. Because, I mean, ultimately it was just some random person that nobody really knew about or was not really connected to the games industry. And then, yeah, ended up being 100% on the money. So it's funny how these stories sort of unfold in the midst of a crisis. We see really interesting things like that happen.
Absolutely. See, I didn't even hear about that at all. That's the first time I heard that.
Yeah.
So
it was interesting to see it all unfold on Twitter. Everybody were like, you know, holy crap, this is, you know, we could have been canceling our flights, you know, a week early if we'd listened to this adult entertainer on Twitter. But yeah, it was, you know, it's not much, but like it just goes to show that like you know, news can really come from anywhere, even if it's something as huge as you know, a gigantic show being cancelled.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Next up, ex-president of Nintendo America, Reggie Fils-Aimé, joins GameStop's board of directors. So Fils-Aimé originally left Nintendo after almost 2 decades leading Nintendo's American branch back on April 15 last year, 2019. And he will officially join GameStop's board on April 20th this year. So that'll be just a little over a year since leaving. And in that time, he's made a lot of public speaking appearances. He has, I think he's provided regular lectures at the University of Cornell or something like that to their business students and things. So he has been working in that time, but he'll officially be joining the board to help steer GameStop's business. Reinvigorate GameStop's business and sort of steer it on a bit of a course correction after a. I think it's kind of safe to say after a bit of a tailspin over the last decade or so with the rise of digital storefronts and things like that. Yeah. How do you guys feel about this, about an ex Nintendo figurehead now joining one of the world's largest video game retailers?
I mean, think like this is one of those things where it's like, first of all, it's not going to be like a full-time job. It's just he's on the board. So when the board meets, he'll be there as well.
It's an advisory so it's not like position.
Yeah, it's an advisory position. So he won't be there, you know, working in GameStop headquarters, you know, 24/7. But I mean, I think the most important thing that GameStop would be getting out of this is access to, well, greater access to other industry figures. Reggie is obviously extremely well connected, basically everywhere. Like you don't be president of one of the big three gaming companies without having hella connections. This is going to be, and I mean, like, it, obviously he's got those connections, but he also has like sway. He's been an industry player for, you know, 2 decades now. So, you know, when Reggie says something, people are more likely to listen. And I think that's what GameStop really needs right now. As you said, like with the rise of digital gaming, the business has not been going super well. And it only seems to be getting worse. I mean, we saw Game Informer Australia sadly had to shutter last year. And we've seen, you know, EB Games stores closing across the country. Many more GameStop stores in the US have closed as well. So they really need to do something.
Yeah, and this is, interestingly, since that announcement as well, I mean, it just goes to show how sort of questionable GameStop's instructional direction has been with, you know, a lot of businesses and non-essential businesses being ordered to close down to help prevent the spread of COVID-19 among, you know, the mainstream and, you know, the whole kerfuffle with GameStop headquarters enforcing in a way that their stores remain opening and considering them as an essential business to still provide games and microphones and other, you know, tech hardware and things like that. And then this overnight, one of the American states, I can't remember, it might've been Philadelphia or something. Their governor officially ordered that all GameStops be closed and changed the level to businesses that, are essential to assisted living or something like that, a much more direct, directed language at reasoning for stores staying open. So yeah, it's an interesting development since then. Luke, sorry, have you got something to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, Reggie joining the board is a good thing, but it's still up to the CEO and the leadership of GameStop to turn it around. All Reggie's going to be able to do is if GameStop say, hey, we're going to install 100 new Wi-Fi outlets in our stores so people can go online, you know, they might turn around and say, well, that's a silly idea. People can get online anywhere. So I don't know if it's going to make a huge difference, but I suspect he's going to maybe provide a bit more insight onto what the publisher is looking for from GameStop rather than what the consumer is looking for. But you got to remember, Reggie's the guy that came up with the Bigfoot pizza for Pizza Hut. You know, it was that, you know, massive, like, 24 slice pizza. So, you know,
that was prior to him working at Nintendo.
So he was at Pepsi and then Pizza Hut and then Nintendo. So, you know, he literally now has sort of done the trifecta of gaming. You know, the actual game is the food and the drink. But it's just a matter now of making sure that expectations get tempered a lot on this announcement, because, as Ollie said, he's in an advisory position. He's not making the decisions. Much like Steve Jobs was a member of the board for Disney, you know, Bob Iger was a member of the board for Apple. So being on a board doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, your idea is taken for, you know, for gospel, but it's kind of like just a nudge in a general direction. So how that turns out in the long run, I don't know. But I did read something about GameStop looking to become more of a social place that you can hang out, which is cool, but, you know, I don't know if that's going to be enough for them. I think they need something a bit more than just, you know, another place to go hang out and chat with people.
Yeah, so they have a couple of concept stores that they've rolled out in the US that have more social spaces. And, like, I think the idea was that they want to be sort of like a gaming library where you can also buy the games. So it's one of those things where, you know, you can go there and you can play, you know, a wide variety of games, but, like, also you're encouraged to buy them. Which I'm assuming, given, you know, GameStop and EB Games, you know, ruthless policies on getting people to pre-order stuff, that's going to be very front-facing for sure. In those experiences.
You're not allowed to visit the library unless you pre-order something. And, I mean, the other thing too is EB Games, yes, is owned by GameStop, but they operated out here independently for some time without the US being directly involved. It's only in the past sort of 7 or 8 years that GameStop US has started taking control. And you can see it here. You know, a lot of the things that they've done have changed in how they, you know, approach sort of, you know, the business. And pre-ordering, unfortunately, is one of those things where they keep sort of forcing it down. But I don't see much of Australia's shops changing to meet this sort of thing that they're doing in the US, purely because everything in the US, you know, they've got a much larger market than here. Where I live, I've got two EB Games in my town, and they're both very different to each other. One sort of part Zing store with a lot of merchandise, whereas the other one is just games. So,
yeah, it's similar to me as well. I mean, I live relatively close to the Adelaide CBD, where, and I also live closer to a smaller suburb, EB Games, and yeah, like, they are very, very different. There are different ways that they lay out their stores, sort of attracting different people. Something that is kind of core to GameStop and other game stores remaining open, especially this year with it being a turning point for something like GameStop, is the fact that there will be a new generation of consoles. I bring this up every episode, but there will be a new generation of consoles coming out later on this year, and there will be a need for people to actually go somewhere to buy those. I mean, obviously, digital storefronts are becoming more prevalent, things like Amazon ordering things online, but some people still enjoy the thrill of going to a midnight launch. I know that I'm definitely one. Every time there's a new console, I always go to a midnight launch to go pick it up. I don't really hang around and meet people, but it's kind of fun to stay up to a midnight and get a new spiffy box and bring it home and turn it on and not be able to play any games on it. But yeah, so that is definitely something that will be interesting.
As someone who's actually worked for EB Games doing midnight launches for consoles, it's not that much fun. you know, especially when you have to get the stock ready and you've got a line of people staring at you for an hour to 2 hours watching you put all the consoles out. No, new hardware, you know, is obviously a big thing, and it will generate a lot of business. But again, for us here, we're very different to the US. In the US, there's a much bigger market on that sort of, not instantaneous gratification, but, you know, I want it now sort of mentality. Whereas here, some people are okay to wait till 8 in the morning, you know, 9 the next morning for this stuff. I don't know, because we still don't know if the consoles are actually going to launch here this year. You know, because they keep saying holiday 2020, but, you know, Xbox 360 launched in the US in November and then we got it in March the following year. PlayStation 3 launched somewhat similar. So whether or not that ends up being happening here, I don't know if it's going to impact. I don't know if the changes in the US are going to impact us directly down here because, you know, completely different market set. So,
yeah, that's true. And I mean, like, you know, coronavirus is affecting manufacturing and things across the world as well. So that could also be a further impact to that. Speaking of manufacturing being impacted by coronavirus, the Australian Nintendo Switch stock is currently in short supply due to COVID-19's effects on the wider manufacturing industry in places like China and elsewhere. Shortages have come at a time when Animal Crossing New Horizons just released and is actually Nintendo's flagship 2020 game, as far as we know. So that's a real concern for a lot of goers. In particular is the retailer Harvey Norman, where... Harvey Norman was contacting people mid last week, a couple of days before Animal Crossing had come out, notifying some people who had pre-orders on the Animal Crossing New Horizons Special Edition Switch console, that's a mouthful, to cancel orders due to low stock. Sources told our site that initial contact was made to delay some orders to sometime after March 20, but then the next day they were then further notified to say that their orders had been straight up cancelled. And one source in Victoria even told us that one store only had 6 units coming and that they were unfortunately the 8th customer on order. So who knows how many other people were also waiting to get their system and had to be notified that their orders were cancelled. There is a quote from Nintendo Australia to Vox though saying, "We can confirm that the manufacturing of some Nintendo products for the Japanese market has been delayed due to the impact of the COVID-19 coronavirus outbreak. Nintendo does not anticipate a significant impact on our broader global supply chain for systems and accessories at this time, and product sales in Australia and New Zealand, North America and Europe, including pre-orders, are not affected." So, I don't know, is this something that you guys feel is a bit of a concern for a lot of people who are looking to who have not gotten a Nintendo Switch yet or are looking to get, you know, a second Switch console to help spread some Animal Crossing love?
I mean, like, Nintendo says, you know, this isn't going to affect Australia. And, like, I have trust in Nintendo Australia that, you know, what they're saying is accurate to them. But, I mean, right now we've seen, you know, we've got Switch stocks, Switch consoles out of stock basically everywhere. And it's not really, it's hard to say whether or not it's actually out of stock or just out of stock online because they were pulling it for stores for Animal Crossing. But like JB Hi-Fi isn't selling any Neon consoles. That's just completely gone off the website. The Grey console stock, the Grey console is in stock in Victoria, but it's out of stock in New South Wales, Western Australia, most of Queensland. And there's basically nothing in Tasmania. I have been able to confirm that, like, Target and Big W down here just have none. There are no consoles. This is down in Tasmania, where I live. So it's a really shaky situation because, you know, we know that the Coral Nintendo Switch Lite was delayed, at least in part, in Europe and Australia because of manufacturing concerns. That does have a release date now, but... yeah, it's a little bit concerning when
what is that release,
you know, you've released. I think that's in April.
April 24, I think it was. From
yeah, memory. April 24.
Yep.
Which I'm very excited about. I'm definitely going to get one because I think it's a beautiful
this
color.
This is kind of funny because we actually talked about the manufacturing of the Coral last episode.
Yeah.
We actually talked about how we hadn't had a date yet and we suspected because of manufacturing delays, and now we actually have confirmation and actual evidence that these things are happening. I mean, it's one of the strange things where delays, unfortunately, are a fact of life. You know, there's always a reason it's delayed. You know, ship doesn't leave on time. You know, somebody at the warehouse hits the stop button when they shouldn't, you know, on the line, stuff like that. There's always something happening. And we've seen it, unfortunately, before. I mean, when the Wii launched back in 2006, you know, it launched... I think it was early November, and by the end of November, there was no stock, and the stock was really trickling in, you know, for a period of sort of 6-8 weeks. And I suspect that's what will happen here: is stock will start to trickle back in now that things are starting up again in China. But I honestly, I don't see it as a big issue. Obviously, it's going to impact people if they want a Neon Switch and they can't find one. But I don't think it's going to be... It's not the end of the world, because we've been through this before with console launches, so...
And what about with Harvey Norman and the way that they've been sort of reacting to people's feedback to this?
It's Harvey Norman. Like, we've considered not including them in our bargain guides before, just because they do tend to be a little bit less reliable for these things. And by less reliable, like, I don't want to, like, slam a company, but, like, of all of the companies that we include in our bargain guides, the only one we've ever really gotten complaints about is Harvey Norman. Just because, you know, people will pre-order stuff months in advance, and then, you know, the release date will come and they'll say, oh, you know, this is out of stock, so you have to wait 2 weeks. And then like, at the end of that 2 weeks, it just says, oh, yeah, this isn't shipping anymore. So, like, it's really frustrating for people who did buy from Harvey Norman, especially because it seems like they did over-order and, under-order and over-promise for these special edition consoles, because I'm sure there were many people who were really looking forward to getting that Animal Crossing Switch on launch day, and now, you know, it's just not there, and obviously you can't transfer your save on Animal Crossing yet, so, like, they have to hold off, or if they don't have a Switch at all, they have to hold off anyway. And there's really, like, obviously some cancels have been, some orders have been cancelled. Some people have been told that there's a slight delay. But I mean, it's just, the moral of the story really is just don't pre-order something really important from Harvey Norman, because, like, there's no chance that you're going to get it.
I mean, I'll be blunt here. There's four retailers that I would trust for games in Australia. It's EB, JB, Gamesman, and Amazon.
Yep.
And even Amazon's a bit of a risky thing. The department stores don't stock everything anymore, because why bother? Why stock the smaller games when they know they're not going to sell them? And unfortunately, Harvey Norman falls into that category. They will stock big things, and even then, it's rare, because the people running their games department aren't gamers. They don't know. So they're going to take whatever advice they get from people in a business sense. And, as I said, you know, they're under-ordering and over-promising stock to the consumer. So honestly, stick with the sort of the four chains, the four big ones. Well, three big ones, and Gamesman being, you know, the sort of independent. And then, you know, from there, we can, you know, look at things further. But honestly, if I want a TV, I'll look at Harvey Norman. But if I want a game, I'm going to go to JB or EB. They're, that's where I'm going for my games.
Fair enough. Cool. All right, Ollie, you, I think, are taking the next one, Indie World.
I am. So on, what day was that? That was like Friday. Monday, Wednesday. I don't know what day it is today. Tuesday, Wednesday. It was Wednesday morning. Jesus Christ!
He's got a quarantine brain over
it's,
there.
It's been a long week. So very early on Wednesday morning, I got up, chugged a bunch of energy drinks, and watched the latest Indie World presentation. It was absolutely packed. There weren't any sort of gigantic games as we've seen in previous ones. Like there was no Hollow Knight. There was no sports story. There was no Cuphead. But what we did see was a really interesting set of games that are due to release this year. So during the presentation, Exit the Gungeon, which is the sequel to, or sort of sequel to, Enter the Gungeon, released during the presentation. But it didn't really, because the eShop was completely down at the time, so it's like 4 or 5 hours later. But that was previously an Apple Arcade exclusive. I think it's been about 9 months since then, so they've been able to bring it to Switch, and that is out now and is absolutely fantastic. Cannot recommend it enough.
If I can interrupt you for a second, that one's the vertical one, right? Yeah. That was why it was on Apple Arcade. So you play it vertically?
Yeah.
So how does it work on Switch then?
I think it's just adapted. I've only like played the very, very small amount of it, and I didn't play it on Apple Arcade. But I think it's purely just adapted to be widescreen instead of tall.
It is something that we need to point out here. It was on Apple Arcade initially, but Exit the Gungeon on Switch and PC, because it hit PC at the same time, is Exit the Gungeon 2.0. They did a lot of updates and a lot of changes to the game.
Yeah,
so it's not as if they just ported the original Apple Arcade. They actually did do a lot of work on it to bring it across to different platforms. So,
Cool. I wonder if it's it's compatible with the Flip Grip if you can play in vertical mode. That would be sweet. I should look that up right now. Please go on.
So I also want to Moving Out by SMG Studio. That was shown off. We already knew, we'd already seen it before. We already had the release date, which is April 28th. There is a demo for it now on the eShop. But that was featured as well. Always nice to see an Australian studio in there. Other big things to mention, I'm just scrolling through it now, is The Last Campfire by Hello Games. Now, Hello Games is the studio that developed No Man's Sky, which a bit of a controversial game at its release, but is significantly better now, and honestly one of my favorite games. This is a much smaller story-driven experience. It's a platformer. It revolves around some really interesting mechanics. For real, just go watch the trailer for it, because it looks beautiful. It was previously announced at the end of 2018, but it was a small teaser. We didn't really see much gameplay, and now we've got a proper thing for it, and that's due to come out in winter. There's Pixel Junk Eden 2. I don't really know much about Pixel Junk anything. I think Luke probably knows a bit more about that.
Yeah, I don't. I honestly have never played any of the Pixel Junk games.
I really liked Shooter and Racer. I think there was a Pixel Junk Racer or something like that. I really like Pixel Junk Shooter. It was cool. They have really nice art styles.
Yeah, it looks absolutely incredible. The Blair Witch on Switch, or Blair Switch, as Luke would prefer we call it.
thank you.
That was previously announced on released on other consoles, and making the jump over here. Possibly the most interesting one is Sky Children of the Light by That Game Company, which is the name of the company, and not just me forgetting the name of the company. They're the company that made Journey, Flower, and Flow, I think. I'm not forgetting anything there, am I?
I think those are it.
No, that's it.
And that was previously exclusive to Apple platforms. I think it was primarily on Apple TV. And that's coming to Switch now, and that is an absolutely fantastic game. I had the pleasure of playing that on Apple TV, and it's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to playing that one. That's one that I saw in the article, and I thought, oof, I've got to get into that one. I really enjoyed Flower. That's probably been my favorite. I played Flower multiple times. I only ever played Journey once. It was a nice game, but I really preferred Flower.
Yeah, and this looks like absolutely beautiful. It looks sort of like, I would imagine, like a cross between Flower and Journey would be. It's got sort of a little bit of everything that they've done in the past. And it looks absolutely beautiful. That is also scheduled for winter. And then, what were you saying?
I was going to say, I suppose one of the things to take away from this showcase is that most of the games are sort of within the next sort of 6 months. There's very few of them that didn't actually get a release date. Most of them are, winter. So, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, so most of the games were sort of in the next 6 months. And we know that Nintendo likes to do these indie world things about every 3 to 5 months. So most of these games will probably be out by the time we get the next set of games. There's The Good Life by White Owls, which is Swery's company. It looks absolutely bonkers, but I'm really interested in it. It's about, some deep, dark secret in a town where on full moon, everybody turns into dogs and cats. I don't know. And then the biggest one for me is Terry Kavanagh's Dicey Dungeons is coming to Switch. It's the first time it's going to be on console. It previously released on PC late last year. It is possibly my favorite game of all time. It's a deck-building roguelike dice game. It's hard to explain it. There's nothing really like it on the market. But it's just a fantastic game with a fantastic art style. And I'll be really interested to see how the gameplay is adapted to a controller, because it doesn't really seem like it could be.
Yeah, I've heard good things about Dicey Dungeons, but I've never actually given it a shot. But given your glowing recommendation just then, I actually might give that one a crack.
Oh, it's so good. I don't really like roguelike games all that much, just because you have to sort of give up all of your progress pretty frequently. But in this case, it's more like you've got a small mission to do, and you may or may not succeed. It's less roguelike and more, you know, a bunch of small games, I guess, that have the same mechanics. But it's really just a wonderful game. I cannot recommend it enough. And that's just sometime in 2020, but it'll be worth it when it comes. There's so many more in there. I can't name all of them. There's a free-to-play shooter. There's a free-to-play card game. There's, you know, just all sorts of crazy things and a lot of timed exclusives for console as well. So check out the article because there's so much. It was scheduled to go for 20 minutes. They can find that on Vooks.net.
There we go.
But yeah, it was supposed to go for 20 minutes. It ended up being about 29, just short of 30 minutes. And yeah, there's so much in there. So check it out. It's great to see indies on Switch and how much love and support Nintendo's been giving them. Because I mean, you don't really see this kind of thing with Sony and Microsoft. They you know, market the games a little bit, but like nowhere near this extent. So it's really wonderful to see Nintendo, you know, putting their weight behind some of these smaller games.
Yeah, I mean, Xbox has the idea at Xbox program, which I can't think of the guy's name that runs it. He comes out to PAX every year. You know, they do a lot of work with them. And, you know, there's a whole ID at Xbox section on their shop on Xbox One. But, you know, there's no ID at Xbox segment during their... what are you thinking? Their live streams they do occasionally. So it's pretty much just them. You know, if you happen to scroll past it, you might see something. Nintendo's the only one out of the three of them that says, look, hey, you know, we've got our own games, Activision have their games, but here's all the indie games that you might not know. And I think that's what the benefit for this is. It's not a matter of saying, hey, you know, these are the next games they're gonna blow you away, but it's like, hey, these are games made by 2, 3, 5, 6, 10 people that maybe you don't know anything about. I think that's really what's gonna sell people on them.
Yeah, and we've seen huge games come out of that. So like things like Golf Story was one of the first indie games that got huge success on Switch. We've seen Hollow Knight just absolutely explode. The Shovel Knight series is still going strong somehow, and you know, just killing it. So you know, Nintendo, like, showing off these games is doing absolute wonders for these studios. And I hope that they continue doing it. It seems like they had different presentations in different regions that were called different things. Now they're all under Indie World and they all happen at the same time. So it looks like they're going all in on this Indie World branding. And you know, keep at it, because these are some awesome games and, why not?
Yeah, I mean, sorry, I just want to talk about The Last Campfire a little bit more, because as you mentioned, it's Hello Games who did No Man's Sky. But before then, they did the series Joe Danger, which was, you know, on the Vita and the PS4. You know, and so this is a developer that's done two wildly different games, one being a, you know, Excite bike style platformer and one being not a massively open world, but a massively galaxy world sort of thing. And now they've come out with this one. And it's the one thing that sort of people don't notice, but the senior designer for the game actually did, he was the creator on Lost Winds, which is one of the old WiiWare titles.
Yes, like where
you controlled the air.
Yeah,
so there was that one and then the sequel, which I can't remember the name of it. So it was two of them there, and they got ported to iPhone, I think, a while later. But so if, you know, The Last Campfire looks familiar, that's why. It's because it's you know, the designer of Lost Winds and the team at Hello Games making this one. So that's why it's got my attention, because I remember playing Lost Winds on WiiWare a lot. Mm. And, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did not realize that there was a connection there. That's a really good point. It's interesting. Cool. All right. Well, then that's Indie World. That's a whole slew of games to look forward to. And as Ollie mentioned, you can find the article detailing all of those games on the site, Vooks.net. Let's move on to the biggest release of on Nintendo for the year, at least as far as we know, for the first
half of the year. Doom 64.
That's exactly not correct. Animal Crossing New Horizons just released here in Australia and even worldwide 2 days ago. And It's absolutely already taken up my life. My girlfriend is currently playing it in the other room as we speak right now. She just caught a piranha and quickly put that bad boy in her pocket like it ain't no thing. Let's first of all address the review. So this is something that has been a bit of an itchy point for a lot of Australian game sites and small and big about where our reviews are. Now, you guys would probably be a little more in tune with this one. So Ollie, why don't you take this one for us and just explain the situation?
Sure. So basically, it's a little bit of a complicated situation, and Nintendo Australia has not been able to provide us with review codes for this or a couple other previous games. They haven't really given any reason why, and it seems largely outside of their control, but that results in us not being able to provide reviews for the games before they launch. It's a really unfortunate situation for us because, obviously, you know, we'd love to play it, but also we want to make sure that, you know, all of our readers are getting the most out of the games that they can buy, and we want everybody to understand the games that they're going to buy before they buy them. So it's disappointing. But at this time, it's looking like this could be something that happens for a while. You know, nobody wants to say, you know, this is definitely going to be, you know, 3 or 4 or even 12 months of us not getting of all of Australia not getting review codes before release, but it could be forever for all we know. It sucks for us. I'm sure it sucks for every other Australian outlet that would like to put a review out for it. We have to work with what we're given. So we will have a review coming up for Animal Crossing, but it's a game that you can't really play in a couple days. So it'll be a little while, but it is on the way.
And likewise, following on from that, we will have a specified episode all about Animal Crossing New Horizons coming next week, when more of us actually have more time to play the game. As Ollie just mentioned, this game will be played. It's one of those games that is meant to be played over the long term. And as many of our listeners would probably know from playing the game already, it takes quite a few days to actually get into the real meat of the game, to be able to unlock a lot of things and meet a lot of new characters and things like that. So it will take us a little bit of time, but we are aiming to do a Nookcast special next weekend. So be sure to look out for that. But in the meantime, though, why don't we talk a little bit about what we've seen in terms of just the wider reaction to the game, how you know, Twitter is taking the game, or Facebook, our own circles, how we've experienced it with people around us. Luke, why don't you start us off? What's your experience been so far with Animal Crossing New Horizons?
I mean, I'm bouncing back and forth between Doom Eternal and Animal Crossing. So
yeah, same.
I literally have the juxtaposition of hardcore heavy metal, gore and demons, and then wholesome, chill Animal Crossing.
I think you mean the sturdy balance.
Yeah, you know, one extreme to the other. My honest thing is with it that I'll be honest, I'm not a big Animal Crossing fan. I played the one on the N64 a lot, and then I sort of gave up on the series. But for me, Animal Crossing New Horizons, it's just, you know, I can jump in for 10 minutes, you know, run around, check a couple of trees, and then go, you know what, that's actually cool. I come back in an hour because it's real time, whereas, you know, other games where it's like this, like Stardew Valley or My Time at Porsche, they're all very much the same where, you know, you get 10 minutes and that's your day in the game. So I'm just enjoying the chillness of it all, that I don't have to say, I've only got 10 minutes, I need to get this and this done, because it's going to be night and then I'm out of luck. So that's what I'm enjoying about it right now.
Yeah, just to quickly jump in on that, I think that's exactly how the game is sort of supposed to be played. You know, these little bites, especially the early game, you know, little bites of things throughout the day, you know, 10 minutes here, half an hour there, that kind of thing. But because of the wider pandemic and people being ordered worldwide to stay home to help prevent the spread of coronavirus, many of us don't have anything else to do but to jump in for a 10-hour stretch and just collect every damn thing we possibly can. That's definitely how we've been playing it. Ollie, what about your experience with the game?
So I'm actually quite lucky in that, like, I've played a lot of the multiplayer at this point. Last night, at the time of recording, we in the Vux Discord, which you can get to from bit.ly/VuxDiscord, is we had a games night last night where everybody, you know, hopped into voice chat and jumped into each other's towns and basically tried not to ruin each other's towns with our axes. But it's one of those things where, like, you know, if you are stuck inside and you can't do anything else, like, you, there's always something to do in Animal Crossing, even if you've got like 5 minutes or 12 hours, you know, like in that 5 minutes, you could go around and talk to your villagers, you know, maybe get a couple things built. But you know, if you've got 12 hours, you can, you know, catch fish and store them all on your beachfront, like many people have been doing, or, you know, collect the resources to build a house for a new villager that could move in. So it's really good for you know, jumping between games, as many people are doing right now, or just for sitting there for 12 straight hours and soaking in the cuteness of everything that's on display.
Yeah, I will admit, this game is supposed to sort of bring a sort of calm or an inner zen when you play it. But I will admit that this morning I woke up cheesed as all heck because I was expecting the museum to finally be open after delivering so many things to Blathers yesterday and finding that it's only just now under construction and won't be open until tomorrow. What the hell am I supposed to be doing with my entire menagerie of just random animals filling up my house? I don't know what to do, guys. It's such a conundrum. Absolute first world problem. So frustrating. But yeah, the wider response to the game seems to be overwhelmingly positive, as we would probably expect given our current climate of news. But yeah, it's just it's always great to see a game come out and just have this this firm grip on the cultural zeitgeist, in terms of like everyone just posting silly GIFs of things that are happening, all these ridiculous happenstances, NPCs doing things they're probably not supposed to do, or people just not being able to catch this one bug or something happening. It's really great to see that, and kind of just, I don't know, fills me with warmth a little bit, knowing that what I'm doing is also what other people are doing around the world, and that I'm not just a creepy dude sitting in his lounge room playing with animals all day.
Yeah, and I think it's been like really interesting to see like just how social media has been revolving around this game as well. One of the most interesting things that, like, I have a marketing background, so I really am interested in social trends, particularly on Twitter and Facebook. And one of the most interesting things that I've seen is that, like, at about 11 a.m. yesterday, the term Blathers started trending across Australia.
That's fantastic.
Because obviously a lot of people logged in and Blathers had arrived. So I think it's really interesting to just like to see, like, and that was like the number one trend in Australia at 11 a.m. yesterday. So like,
that's really funny.
Yeah. But I've been really enjoying seeing that. And like, there have been so many posts, and I don't think it's possible to have a Twitter feed that doesn't get filled with Animal Crossing in the past couple of days, because everybody's talking about it, and it's just been a really wonderful social experience, which is good at times like this, where, you know, we can't go out and you know, spend some time with our friends, but you know, you can still see that they're having fun with their yellow squirrel on their dumb island.
Yeah, are you making the official prediction here, Ollie, in that case, that next Saturday we will see KK Slidus trending when he's playing in the bar?
Oh, I have no doubt.
That's great.
I do find it funny, though, that it's yet another Nintendo game that has done this. So we've seen it before. I mean, Untitled Goose Game wasn't made by Nintendo, but it's sort of the last big game that did it, where, you know, it captured the attention of everyone. From hardcore gamers to casual gamers to celebrity gamers. I mean, Brie Larson, Captain Marvel herself, is a massive Nintendo fan, and she's for months been retweeting people when they say, oh, I hear you like Animal Crossing. She's like, I love Animal Crossing, you know. Just this morning I saw that Ronda Rousey was hosting an Animal Crossing live stream where she was playing the game and raising money for charity. So it's one of those things where this is just another Nintendo game where, because there's no, oh, I need to be able to jump, turn, shoot, grapple, climb up, reload, jump, shoot, and all this, you know, combination all over again, where it's just so relaxing that people can just do it, even if they're not active gamers. I think that's the reason that people are digging this one, and not so they can bury things on the beach, which is honestly weird. But I think it's just, you know, just letting loose and just saying, you know, I don't care if I just spend, like, I literally had my Switch sitting next to me while I was playing some Doom this morning, and I had my guy standing on the beach watching the waves. That was it. That's all he was doing for half an hour while I played some Doom, just to let it play in the background just so I could listen to it, because it was just so, you know, the waves crashing on the shore and all that sort of stuff. So I think that's probably the big thing for Animal Crossing, is that it doesn't matter if you're a gamer or not, you can still enjoy it.
For sure, yeah. It is really interesting just seeing the wider behaviors of people accepting this game. And like, even amongst my friends, like I have my own little Facebook group chat with 7 other people, where we've all pulled together to start a Nintendo family account for Nintendo Online. And I'm constantly putting up, you know, the eShop store updates every week that, you know, are posted by you guys, and sharing those and things like that. And just yesterday, about 5 of us were just on Animal Crossing all day, jumping into each other's towns. A couple of them weren't quite up to, like, sort of the point where they had the vaulting pole to be able to get across their rivers, so I helped them out get their fruit and their fossils and things like that. So, you know, it was just kind of nice having this, you know, just very communal experience where everyone's just helping each other out, collecting things and stuff like that. And we're all going to each other's beaches, just fishing for sharks. My girlfriend's island was the only one that was raining, so there was just one particular type of fish that we could get only at her beach. So we went to her island to go do that and stuff. So it's just been really, really fun like that. And yeah, Ollie, I had no idea that we even had something going on the Vooks Discord. So that's really great to hear. I mean, people should absolutely jump in on that and join us and have some fun like that. Here's a little pro tip for you guys though. If you're busy working and you would love to have sort of that Animal Crossing aesthetic going on, and you have and use Google Chrome as your primary browser, be sure to install the Animal Crossing Music extension, which just adds a little button to your browser where you can just click it and immediately it plays whatever music is set for that hour of the day, and it does it for 24/7. It's really, really convenient. It's a really great little extension. I've had it for years. It's so good.
That sounds absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it's very good. I'm not sure if they've updated it with the newer music from the newer game, but they definitely had New Leaf's music in there. And it was great just to tune in and just have some real chill vibes going in the background. It was good. Okay. All right. Well, let's wrap it up there for Animal Crossing New Horizons. So as I mentioned earlier, be sure to look out for our Nookcast special next weekend. But let's quickly jump into other games that we're playing. So Luke, you mentioned Doom Eternal. I'm also playing Doom Eternal, but you're playing it on PC though. How's the experience going for you there?
It's Doom. It's on PC. That's all that needs to be said. No,
easy
so it's one of those things where Doom. So there's some games that you play on one platform over another, right? For years, Call of Duty was the Xbox platform, but Doom is always on PC. And you know, because I have my own site, I do my own thing with companies, and Nvidia were nice enough to send me a 2060 Ti. So the game is looking absolutely amazing on the PC, and it plays, it's smooth as, it's really, really, really fast to load and just smooth in frame rate. So, I'm loving it. I'm having a great time with it. It's just so challenging at times. So, so challenging.
Fair enough. And you're also playing Doom 64. How's the remaster or whatever it is going on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's Doom 64. It's as clunky as I remember it from the 64. It just plays a bit smoother now. And I'm not trying to fight with a stick that took a bashing from Mario Party beforehand. So it's old school Doom. You know, you can't look up or down. So there's, you know, the experience is severely limited, but it's still fun to play a game that I, you know, haven't played in 20 years. So.
Yeah, and I remember playing it very, very briefly when I was much younger on the 64, but I don't remember a whole lot about it. Is this sort of a remake of the original Doom, or is it its own Doom entry?
No, it's its own one.
Right.
It does seem like it's a remake because it is, you know, old school in its design, but it is its own little thing. So I'll be honest, it's been that long, I can't remember the story off the top of my head, but it is its own thing. I know that one.
Sure. Yep. And what else are you playing on PC?
Ironically, everything is on PC for me lately, apart from Animal Crossing. The other one that I'm playing, it's in closed beta It's called Monster Train. It is a roguelike card game on a train where you're a bunch of demons protecting the final spark of hell, because the rest of hell is frozen over from the invaders from heaven. And you have to defend the spark by building a deck of monsters that you can summon to fight for you. But as you play the game, each time you play it, the levels are different, the cards are different. So it combines like the core of a roguelike and the core of like Hearthstone. And I'll be honest, they're two of the things that I cannot stand in gaming. I do not like roguelike and I do not like card games. But this one is interesting. So I'm giving that a go.
Cool. Ollie, what are you playing?
Okay, so I'm finishing up my review currently for Pokemon Mystery Dungeon DX. I'm in well into the post game in that, and it is kicking my butt. it gets extremely difficult in the later end because you're going through dungeons that are like 99 floors long, and there's no rest spaces in between, so you have to stock up really well. But enjoying that a lot. I've fainted in a dungeon and had to get a friend to rescue me more times than I can count. But it's great fun. But I've also been playing...
One might say you're playing Pokemon Mastery Dungeon now?
Nice. That pretty much sums it up here. But I've also been playing Dicey Dungeons. I mentioned it earlier. Fantastic game. But it's just been my go-to quarantine game outside of Animal Crossing because, you know, there's always time to play with some dice. I am interested, though, Angelo, to hear how you've progressed through Kingdom Hearts, because it's been a while since you mentioned that.
Yeah, so last week, we finally finished Kingdom Hearts. I say we, me and my girlfriend, we've been playing through it. We started it maybe 2 months ago or something. I had first started playing that game when it came out on PS2. It was my sister's PS2, so I would just borrow it from her every now and again out of her room and take it to my room and play it every now and again. But I never actually finished it, and I thought I'd only gotten a couple of worlds in or whatever, but then when I finally got towards the end, I was still remembering cutscenes and the way dialogue had rolled out, and I'm like, oh gee, back when I played it 15 years ago, I actually got much further than I thought. So it turns out I was actually really quite close to the end and I just never finished it. But yeah, it was really interesting going back and playing it. I mean, my girlfriend is really into Disney, as many people are. I know I definitely am as well, but she'd never really been into Kingdom Hearts into Final Fantasy or anything like that. So this was a good little bridge into that. And also for me as well, because again, I didn't specifically grow up with the PlayStation. I was much more of a Nintendo and Sega guy. So it was great to jump in and sort of rekindle my familiarity with that facet of Final Fantasy. I mean, when I first started playing Final Fantasy, it was when I'd gotten my PS3 and I was going through the backlog through some of those games. Yeah, it was really good. I mean, this one, I'm well aware that the Kingdom Hearts story over its entire saga is absolutely just nuts and makes no sense. It's just a complete pile of mush. but this one so far actually kind of makes sense from what's happening in that typical anime, it doesn't really make sense kind of way. So, yeah, we haven't really had any problems there, but we were playing it on PS4 with the 2.5 mega collection thing, whatever that's called, where it's just got a whole bunch of the games on the disc. So we will play through those over the coming months or so. But with Animal Crossing, I mean, it's to definitely put a halt on that for now. as I mentioned before, I'm definitely playing Doom Eternal. Really loving that game. I really, really love the way that game eggs you on. Like the music in that game in the Doom games has always been something that people really, really appreciate, just with its crazy death metal stuff. But one thing that I realized as I just first booted it up was that the game actively cheers you on by playing much more hardcore music as you go. As things get more and more intense, it starts really ramping up. And it's something that I don't really experience in many other games, where games usually just switch on loud music to get the blood pumping. But this one actually feels like you're being cheered on to be that much more of a badass. And I really, really enjoy that. No game really sort of makes me feel that way. But the third game that I've also been playing, which I just started as well, which will probably just be on pause for a little while, is The Division 2 on Xbox One. And just seeing a lot of photos of just all sorts of cities just completely dead, like no one walking around and stuff, it really brought back memories of playing The Division 1, which was set in New York. Division 2 is set in Washington. So I was just really in the mood to play another sort of apocalyptic game that actually reflects current real life. So, yeah, I was really in the mood to play that one.
I mean, there are a few of those, you know, games. So, you know, Last of Us, Division.
Yeah.
Oh, just, there's so many of those games these days.
Absolutely. I just felt like The Division, though, just really just captured that sort of realism in terms of just the overall aesthetic. Like, it looks a lot more realistic as to what it looks like now. The Last of Us is definitely where we'll probably be going in the next year or so, with just when nature just takes over and there are trees and shrubs and stuff all over the place. Or maybe not.
Well, as long as it's that, we can deal with it. If it's Horizon Zero Dawn future, I don't think we're ready for robot dinosaurs.
No, I don't think we are either. We don't have the infrastructure there, that's for sure. All right, let's start bringing this one home. Let's quickly roll into the eShop recommendations. So there's a lot on sale for this period between this week and the next Vootcast episode. But Luke, why don't you roll us into some of your recommendations for the eShop?
Yeah, so it's obviously a bit of a week, in around the world for people to be stuck at home. Three different companies dropped three different demos, which is insane. Usually we get maybe one every couple of weeks. To get three in one week was a bit out there. We got a demo for Moving Home, which Ollie mentioned briefly before, which was developed in Melbourne, co-developed by SMG in Sydney, and published by Team 17 out of the UK. So it's a
global that Moving Home or Moving Out?
Yeah, Moving Home, yeah.
Moving Out.
Moving Out? Moving Out. Yeah, why don't you say Moving Home for? moving Out. I literally wrote Moving Out on the screen, and I'm saying the wrong name. I apologize to anyone from those studios listening. It is Moving Out. The other one that dropped just late Friday night was Disaster Report 4, which is set in Japan, where your somebody moves to Tokyo and disaster hits. And you're going around and helping people, and, you know, some of the crazy people come out. Some people don't want to help, but they want to get your help and things like that, which is kind of cool. And then Trials of Mana also got a demo, and it's a big demo. It's nearly 5 gig to download it. But the big thing with this one is that all your progress will transfer to the full game. So think of it more as a prologue rather than a demo. And you can choose any of the 6 playable characters and go through all 6 of the opening stories for them. And then obviously transfer the one you want to the full game when that releases later next month.
I love that that trend that's been happening more and more over the years. Like you just mentioned, Luke, with Trials of Mana, I love that some games that are releasing demos are much more of a prologue rather than just here's a slice of the game. I really appreciate that. Like Dragon Quest also did it. And did Octopath do that as well?
Octopath, like did, yeah.
Yeah, that's really, really smart.
Yeah. It honestly makes it a bit easier for me as a reviewer, because, you know, when I have the time, I can jump into the demo and spend, you know, an hour pumping through that really dry and boring, you know, opening of a massive RPG. And, you know, Trials of Mana doing that as well. You know, I've had a quick go at 3 of the 6 to see which story seems like it's going to be my type. Interestingly enough, though, Square Enix also dropped a character quiz on the website for the game, where you can go in, it'll ask a whole bunch of questions and it'll say, hey, we think you'll most like this character. And, you know, they recommend that's the story that you try first. So, it helps me out as a reviewer, but it also, it's just so good that, you know, it's 5-6 hour demo, and I put demo in quotes there, but, you know, it's not technically a demo because I can continue that if I want to. So it's not just, one level and you're done. It's basically a true sample of what the game is. So I like it.
Yeah, that's great. I'll quickly jump in. My recommendations are definitely check out what Square Enix and Capcom have on offer. Pretty much all of their games are up on sale again. This is like their third or fourth one this year. It's pretty crazy how many games they're just putting up on the cheap. But the Square Enix side, definitely all the Final Fantasy games are up on sale. Final Fantasy VII is down to like $9 or something. I picked up Final Fantasy VIII for like $11. I think Final Fantasy XII is like $40. And I think maybe 10 and 10-2 are also a similar price point. So yep. there's a bit of a discrepancy there. But, you know, for some of those classic Final Fantasy games, definitely jump on them if you're interested in those. And, of course, Capcom, your Mega Mans, your Phoenix Wrights, all those are on sale for sure. Ollie, what about yourself?
So obviously, all the Square Enix games, basically every Capcom game. I do want to point out that Octopath Traveler, which was published by Nintendo but developed by Square Enix, is 50% off in celebration of its selling 2 million copies on Switch. I reviewed that when it released, a year and a half ago, almost 2 years now. and just such a fantastic game. And really, it's the evolution of everything that that Bravely Default worked towards, I feel. But apart from that, I would suggest picking up the Shantae games by WayForward. They're all 30% off right now, so you know, get either of them for under $20, or spend $25 to get both of them in one pack. It's hard to go wrong there. There's so much on sale, and there's probably going to be more on sale because we've started seeing sort of sales happen in the middle of the week, not just on the Thursday night like we usually get. We're still only going to publish our updates on Thursday night because the vast majority still come from then. But it just, you know, there's so much happening right now, and developers seem to be keen to put their games on sale for this COVID-19 pandemic to get people playing. So, you know, just keep an eye on the eShop, or failing that, you know, every Friday, check our eShop updates on books.net, because every Friday we have every single new game and every single sale listed.
Yeah, not just that, not just listed, but also linked, so you can directly buy it from the
article. So you can buy it in your browser, and it'll automatically download on your Switch without you having to do anything at all, except maybe free up some space if you don't have a big enough SD card. But yeah, I think that's probably like my favorite part of the eShop update. We spent a lot of time developing that the capability to have those all listed out. So definitely buy things in your browser, because it may, you know, encourage Nintendo to make a proper eShop for Australia.
Yeah, for sure. One that I'll also add, or two that I'll add to that recommendation, are the two Overcooked games. I think the first one is down to like $9, and the second one is between $15 to $20 or something. So if you're having a great time playing Animal Crossing with your significant other during these heavy quarantine times, and you want something to be pissed off with them about, definitely give the Overcooked games a shot, because I guarantee you'll be at each other's throats during that time if you just want to spice things up.
Pretty much anything from Team 17 is really well as co-op. So.
For sure, yeah. And then it'll probably tide you over as well in the meantime before Moving Out comes out. So look into those. All right, quickly running through the release forecast. So between March 22, which is when we're recording, to April 5, which is the next Vootcast episode, we have Vampire the Masquerade, Coteries of New York coming, One Piece Pirate Warriors 4, which Ollie, you are excited about, I believe.
I am very excited about that. Just because I'm not going to take up too much time here, but like for fans of One Piece, this goes all the way up to and then a little bit past where the anime is currently at. So if you want to, you know, get a little bit of a head up on what's about to happen in the anime, I mean, pick up One Piece Pirate Warriors 4, because it looks like it's going to be great. And it looks like they've dialed in the performance on Switch much more than they did in previous games.
Cool. We also have Saints Row 4 Re-Elected, which is a re-release of the game, which came out, 2013, something like that? Quite a while ago?
2013? Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Disaster Report 4, Summer Memories, which Luke just mentioned before. And also Wheel of Fortune / Jeopardy coming out on the 24th, which is in a couple of days. So quite an eclectic mix there.
I just wanted to mention that last one. Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy was something that released on Switch in the first year of release in the US, but they're obviously quite US-centric games, because Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy are, you know, America's games. I, at the time, tried to import it, but couldn't really find it for a decent enough price. But they're finally here, and my understanding, I can't 100% guarantee this, but my understanding from people that I've spoken to who were involved in the game, I can't say much more than that, is that some of the more US-centric questions have been removed for those. So it should be playable for just about anybody.
Awesome. Cool. All right, well, let's wrap things up there. So yeah, thank you guys for joining me for another week of the Vootcast. Hopefully you're all enjoying Animal Crossing New Horizons in the meantime. Again, be sure to look out for the Nookcast coming next week. My name's Angelo. You can find me on Twitter at MANJELL0. Ollie, where can people find you?
You can also find me on Twitter at Chocobalt, CHOCOBALT.
And Luke, where can people find you?
You mentioned before that you're a Disney fan. I have to tell you, I have you beat. People can find me on Twitter at Renderman7, R-E-N-D-E-R-M-A-N. And if anyone actually ever knows what that is, they can tweet at me and I'll give them a digital cookie.
Yeah, I know what your reference is there, but we'll see who does know after all. Yeah, thank you, Ollie. Thank you, Luke, for joining me this week. Be sure to head to Vox.net for more Nintendo updates. And as Ollie mentioned before, check out the eShop segment of the site to be up to date with all the current sales and things like that on the eShop. Thank you very much. And we'll see you next week or next fortnight. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.